Today, my guest is Florian Pestoni from Inorbit, a leading platform for robot operations at scale and our valued partner for VacuCare. Let's delve into some important questions. From the initial POC to achieving full-scale robotization, what are the critical steps along that way? What are the primary challenges faced by OEMs when bringing a new mobile robot to market? And looking ahead, what does the future hold for mobile robotics? Let's go.
Robots are entering new spaces, not just warehouses and manufacturing plants. Today, for example, we have robots deployed in hospitals, in hotels, in airports, in office buildings, and even in agricultural fields. So the range of applications has broadened.
Roboter in der Logistik. Dieser Podcast wird dir präsentiert von Vacu Robotics, die Expertinnen und Experten für mobile Roboter in der Logistik und Produktion.
Welcome to another episode of Vacu Update, the podcast about mobile robots in logistics and production. It's a pleasure to have you back again. My name is Victor Spittgeber. I'm CEO of Vacu Robotics and host of this podcast. Triple founder, investor, startup advisor, venture scout, writer, and last but not least, CEO of Inorbit, a platform for robot operations at scale and a partner of VacuCare. Florian Pestoni can boast an impressive array of credentials. Hi, Florian. It's great to have you here. Florian, it's quite an extensive list. And beyond that, you worked for all the big names like Facebook, Microsoft, Adobe. So you really are a truly experienced entrepreneur and a company builder, product builder. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, I think you're saying I've been around, which I guess I have. And you can see the arrow sticking out of my back from being a multiple-time founder. But it's a great pleasure to be here on your podcast, Victor.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, like you have been through it three times. I have been through it two times. So this is my second startup. And you founded Inorbit in 2017, at least according to your LinkedIn. So you also have been in the robot space for quite a while now, right?
Yeah, technically, I guess we founded the company formally at the very end of 2017. I guess in my mind, it's really 2018 is when we started like really getting serious about it. But yeah, it's been a few years. I knew absolutely nothing about robotics when I started Inorbit. My co-founder, Julian, had quite a bit of experience. He had been at Willow Garage, which many of you will know is where things like, you know, the robot operating system or Gazebo were started. But we decided we wanted to combine the robotics aspect with the cloud approach to things, the high-scale approach of the cloud, and try to bring those two worlds together. And that's where I brought some of my experience with working with products with, you know, a billion users or more. We haven't seen that level of scale in robotics yet. So a lot of what we set out to do is to bring those two worlds together.
So that is cloud and robotics, basically. And what is the product you're building, if you describe it in a few sentences?
Yeah, so we don't make robots. We make the software infrastructure for operating robots at scale. So essentially, the way to think about it is like any complex piece of equipment or process, when robots go out into the real world, you can't assume that they're just going to be perfect and self-managed. And so you have to stay on top of them. You have to know what they're doing. You have to be able to control them. You have to be able to intervene when there's a problem. And at the end of the day, you want, as an end user, what you want is you want the robots to do their job. And you need a management platform to make sure that they're doing it.
So Inorbit is the management platform for any mobile robots. It's predominantly mobile robots, right? You also have some robot arms.
Yeah, I would say we're as robot agnostic as we can. I think from market reality, we've ended up doing a lot of work with mobile robots, but we do have some customers that use Inorbit for different levels of, you know, harms. At the end of the day, it's really about knowing what the robots should be doing and finding out if they're actually doing it.
It's a true challenge, right? Like Logimat was right around the corner, Automate is right ahead, and all the robots at the booth look so nice when they perform their jobs, right? But the reality in any warehouse or manufacturing plant is quite different, right, from the ideal scenario that we are presented with in marketing material. And now, you know, like maybe you can help us understand a bit how exactly you're helping. I mean, I understand management, but, you know, like any robot vendor will tell you, hey, I'm going to bring my robot and, you know, like they're going to run and perform the job according to the requirements.
Yeah, I think, as you said, the world is a very messy place. And I think in the robotics industry, we always talk about dull, dirty, and dangerous tasks. Well, those things can affect the robots themselves, right? You know, if the environment is dirty, the sensors will get covered, and now your performance will fall. Those are things that you may not encounter or to the same degree when you're in the lab. So, but in terms of how we help, so the first thing I'll mention is we work on, you know, both sides of the fence, if you will. So we help robotics companies that may have already, you know, built a robot, the robot is great, but they're lacking the software infrastructure to manage those robots in the field. So in that case, what we're doing is we're augmenting the internal capability of that robot vendor with a platform that's been, you know, proven, it's at scale, it covers a lot of the needs. And those needs vary, you know, so if you're in the first couple dozen robots in the field, you're probably doing proof of concepts and you're still kind of like fine-tuning your robot. Once you're in the hundreds of robots, then your needs will have changed somewhere along the road, because now you need to manage things at scale. And once you get to thousands, now it's mostly statistical management, right? You can't be paying attention to individual robots, at least not the same level of attention that you paid to them when you had a couple dozen. So a lot of it is about how you scale the deployments of robots. And I think a distinction between fixed industrial robots of maybe a couple of decades ago is we're seeing robots are entering new spaces, not just warehouses and manufacturing plants. Today, for example, we have robots deployed in hospitals, in hotels, in airports, in office buildings, and even in the field, not the generic field, but actual agricultural fields. So the range of applications has broadened. In general, I would say it's easier, cheaper, faster to create a mobile robot. So we're seeing many more players entering the space, each with their own capabilities. So I think the space of robotics is expanding very rapidly.
I find this fascinating what you're saying, also in terms of this inflection point where we are right now, where a lot of companies move from essentially POC stage, where they deploy definitely a number below 100, right? And now they're starting scaling. And once they reach 100 and they're growing like with 50 or 100% year over year, then they very rapidly end up with a very different set of challenges they're confronted with. And also interesting that you said with this sensors that get dirty and so on, where our partnership comes into place, right? Where suddenly you have to think, oh, hey, how do I organize service and maintenance at scale? And there we also join forces, because it's very logical that once you help companies managing their fleets at scale, we deliver a subset of functionalities in terms of managing service and maintenance at scale, and oftentimes also on at a global level.
Yeah, and I think our partnership makes a ton of sense also, because if the physical condition of the robot deteriorates, its performance will deteriorate, and no amount of changing bits is gonna change it. You may need to go and replace a tire, or you may need to go and clean a sensor to keep it working as well as it could. From our perspective, I think of our mission as maximizing the potential of every robot. And from that perspective, working with Baku Care is another way of furthering that mission. So I always felt that was that we were very well aligned strategically and philosophically. And I'm glad that we now have the commercial agreement in place to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And excited to see the different sectors or verticals we're expanding to, right? What you're saying, I guess agriculture is something that is a younger industry, so to say, from what I see. But warehousing is growing massively, like ranging from 30 to 50%. And that's just huge. And then also hotels, right? It's just, the companies in the field, also like cleaning, right? It's just, there are so many hotels and they all like staff. So there's such a demand for robotics to just, keep the business going. You're much closer to the market there, I guess, right?
Yeah, so maybe let me talk about the other side of what we do. So I mentioned on the one hand, we work with these different robotics companies, robot developers, to help them, develop a better running robot, right? And the other side of that is we work with the end users. So these are the companies that are adopting robots as part of their operations. They're not in the business of robotics, right? They're a 3PL, for example. They're running an e-commerce fulfillment center, or they're a retailer. So we work with robots that work in retail as well. Or maybe they're a hospital system. And if you think about a hospital, I think it's a good example where the logistics of running it would basically is like a small town, right? And you need to feed thousands of people every day. You need to deliver lab samples to the lab. You need to deliver medication. You need to exchange linen. There are so many tasks. And this is an industry where all those tasks were historically been carried out by essentially people pushing carts. And now that we have these what I call self-driving carts, they can take on a lot of the transport needs, but you're not going to have a single solution for all of those different use cases, right? And then when you add floor cleaning or maybe disinfection, remember during COVID, there was a spike in the number of these ultraviolet-based disinfection robots. There's so many different use cases, and there's such a shortage of labor that I think it's a perfect application for robots, but you need some way to orchestrate all of that so they all work together and they're not, you don't have issues like, traffic jams or collisions or and you can't interfere with the actual operation that you're trying to improve, right? So they need to coexist with people for the foreseeable future. So I think that complexity is something that also needs to be managed by an end user.
What you're saying that a hospital is like a town, right? Because you have all the functions that you need in a town. And it's crazy to think about the fact that, all those dull tasks are really carried out by humans that are, so much needed to actually take care of people instead of pushing carts, right? Also seeing the similarities across different verticals again, right? Where you have, in hospital with all the different tasks, you have like almost a close environment, and somehow a farm is very similar, right? You have all the different tasks on a farm, or a warehouse where you have all the different tasks in a warehouse that need to be carried out. And then when you look one level higher, you might have a corporation that has multiple warehouses, or a corporation that has multiple hospitals or farms. So then you reach this next level of managing complexity.
having worked with a lot of end users, I think we've found some patterns in, you know, how they approach adopting robotics. And, you know, it usually starts with, as you mentioned, with a pilot, with one vendor, maybe one robot or a couple. And those pilots, as we know, can last for a really long time, right? Because you're not just, I think everyone is focused on proving ROI, but you first need to prove viability. You need to change a lot of the internal processes. So that pilot stage can last sometimes years. I would say it's getting reduced with some more proven use cases. So it's becoming faster. The pilot phase or the proof of concept phase may be shorter. But for an end user that's never used robots before or autonomous robots before, there's a time to assimilate the new way of working. Then you're like, okay, great. We had a successful POC or pilot. Let's start rolling in deployment the thing that we just piloted. And you usually pick one site, and then you start to scale. But then if you think about, as you said, these end users that may have multiple sites, multiple locations, maybe around the world, then you start to say, okay, so if this worked for this site, maybe it will work at this other site. And you start to roll out. And then you're like, well, if, let's say, material transport of pallets worked, how about cleaning the floor? Can I get a robot for that? So now you start to branch out into new tasks. But in doing that, maybe now you have different vendors. So now it's like, okay, you have two vendors. Maybe we'll have this one run during the day, this one during the night. But as you start adding more, then that kind of separation in space and time just doesn't work, right? Eventually, you need to have them working together. So over time, we expect that most companies will be having, you know, many robots from different vendors carrying out different tasks and across many locations. And that level of complexity usually goes beyond what we traditionally saw, let's say, in a manufacturing plant, where each plant was to some extent unique and had very, you know, well-defined constraints. In logistics, for example, as you mentioned, I mean, we have companies that have 5,000 warehouses around the world. So that the complexity there is a whole nother level compared to just one production line, for example.
It's interesting that you have 5,000 warehouses, and I wonder, you know, like how many of them are running robots already. It's probably like a very small percentage.
It probably is, but as you said, I think it's growing very rapidly. And once you prove it out in one location, one type of use case, then you start to see that rapid expansion.
You talk, you know, like about the different steps when adopting robots, right? Where companies move from POC, then really adopting processes, adopting their organization to work with robots, eventually like scaling this one use case across different sites and adding more use cases, which comes oftentimes with more vendors. In Germany, VDA 5050 is always a topic when it comes to interoperability. There's this AGV mashup here in Germany right around the corner where, I don't know, like how many vendors, probably 5 or 10 vendors are orchestrated. How is this in US, or I mean, like, you're not just US, I know, but how do you perceive, is this, you know, like VDA 5050, is it really more in manufacturing, or, you know, like, is it also playing a role in hospitals, for instance?
This idea of interoperability is something that we started working on years ago, and we got some kind of strange looks from people, kind of like, why would I ever need that? And I'm really glad to see that it has, the attitudes have started to change since then. And today, we manage robots on 4 continents, so we're exposed to a lot of different initiatives. Today, I'm aware of at least 4 different interoperability initiatives and standards. I'm sure there's more popping up regularly. So that's kind of the normal process, I would say, for things to get to one standard, you need to first have many standards. And sometimes you end up with multiple, right? So you use 220 volts in Europe, we use 110 in the US. And over time, people learn to live with that, lack of standardization. But we're in the really early stages, I would say. I think VDA 5050 did a great job of bringing some of these different solutions together. At Inorbit, we support multiple standards, including VDA 5050. We've done open source projects with some of our partners to make it easier for a robot vendor to become VDA 5050 compliant. VDA 5050 has this concept of a master controller. So Inorbit can act as a master controller. So we absolutely support the work there. I think what I would say, so in the US, there was this effort around Mass Robotics, which put out, and we're a member of Mass Robotics as well. And we've done public demos in partnership with some of the Mass Robotics robot vendors. We're part of the Open Source Robotic Alliance, which is the group behind, Ross and Gazebo and another interoperability mechanism called OpenRMF. We support that as well. So I think the idea is there are all these different mechanisms. Now, having said that, we haven't seen yet a massive adoption of these standards across the board. I think what you're seeing is these pockets where individual companies, individual products within that company may support it. But if you pick a random robot, is it going to be compatible? Maybe, maybe not. So we still have a ways to go. One of the things that we do to solve for that is, so there's two approaches to interoperability. You get everyone to speak the same language, if you will, right? Or you can translate between different languages. So we actually support both modes. And what we can do is we can think of it as the Google Translate of robotics, right? So we can connect to a robot through its proprietary mechanisms. So they don't need to change the robot to comply with a particular standard. If a robot already supports the standard, then great, we can talk to it that way. There's usually trade-offs involved. So the standards today are providing something like VDA, providing a basic level of data, but not as rich as some of the proprietary mechanisms that are out there, right? And then what we can do is we can bridge across all of those. So we can have a VDA robot, a Mass Robotics robot, a proprietary robot that ships with Inorbit built in, another robot that has its own proprietary fleet manager, and we can put all of that together in one place. So rather than wait until everyone converges on the one true way, we allow for many different ways and many different mechanisms, but we smooth the differences to make them work together.
Interoperability is something that, for most companies, as you pointed out earlier, comes pretty late in the adoption process. When is the right time to get you onboarded, right? Someone listening saying, hey, I'm at this point on the journey, somehow it sounds interesting what Inorbit does, but am I too late? Am I too early? What's the right time to get in touch with you?
So here's what I would say. If you're an end user and you're thinking about maybe using robots, that's too early. You need to have some experience with robots. If you're running a pilot, we are able to help, for example, with capturing data and making it actionable without having to become an expert in a particular robotic system. But I would say we start to add the most value as you scale. Whether it's with a single robot or a single vendor or multiple, there's usually a lot of management aspects with running your robot fleet. And a lot of that may be provided by a single vendor, but they're usually pretty busy just making their robot work. Whereas in our case, we're really focused on this one aspect, which is robot operations, not making robots. So I think that gives us an edge. And then as you move down that journey that I was describing before, where you're now operating in multiple locations. And for example, a lot of the, you know, proprietary fleet managers that come with robots only work in one site, right? On one network. So we can allow you to bridge all of that. And by the time you're trying different robots from different vendors, then I think that's definitely when where we can help in a way that individual robot vendors probably can't. The other thing I would mention is, so people talk a lot about interoperability, but that's a very kind of like, that's something that engineers care about from a protocol specification perspective. But I think what end users or our perspective is that what end users want is something we call orchestration, which is almost like a higher level concept. It assumes that there's some level of interoperability through any of these mechanisms, but it's less focused on the mechanism, the how do we talk to the robot, and it's more focused on what are you trying to achieve, right? And how do you manage your robot operations? So we spend a lot of time talking about orchestration and demonstrating orchestration. So one of the things we've done is we've created something we call the robot space. And it's here in Silicon Valley. And it's really a manifestation of the ecosystem coming together. So we have robots of different kinds for different use cases from many different vendors. But we also have the supporting infrastructure, like, for example, wireless charging for robots or integrations with cameras or doors or other things that exist in the space. And we show how you can orchestrate all of that. So we kind of do that mashup every day, and we carry out a lot of demos. I think last year we did 250 demos. And this year we've expanded the robot space and are on track for many more. So I think this is a way to turn this kind of like slightly theoretical and hard to grasp topic into something very tangible, because you can see the robots. You can see one robot waiting at an intersection and letting the other one pass. Then it's like, okay, it's very concrete. It's no longer this abstraction of interoperability.
We have these two sides of the coin that you're providing. And what I'm observing is that you have a lot of established industry players that say, hey, I also want to be part of this robot evolution. I'm gonna design my own MR. And because I'm behind in terms of time, I'm late to the party. I need to partner because, you know, like if I develop everything from scratch, I'm way too slow. And also it's way too costly to, you know, like build everything in-house, but rather it's an effort focusing on, you know, like one aspect or, you know, like maybe just leveraging the sales network. So I wonder from a robot vendor perspective or, you know, like a company that thinks about bringing something to market, when is the right time for them to contact you?
They can come as early as they want, and I'll tell you a little bit about how we approach that. But so you mentioned a couple of the reasons why, you know, time to market obviously is a critical one, maybe the cost of development. I would say there's another one, which is kind of like, what do you want to be great at? If you want to be great at making a robot for a particular use case, that's really hard, just doing that part, right? I think we all know how hard robotics is to not to get a robot that sort of works, but a robot that works really great is really hard. If you know, and in the same way that most people, not everyone, most people may not design their own drive or their own LiDAR, and they're going to purchase components for that. It allows them to specialize in something else. I think the same is true for some of this operational software. And to make that decision a little bit easier for customers, we stay away from things that are in the tight loop of the working of the robot itself, like, you know, the navigation and path planning and obstacle detection and, you know, SLAM. So those are things we chose not to work on, precisely because we think it's very tightly coupled with the development cycle of the robot and its internal operations. It's very tightly coupled with sensors and compute. But what we do is kind of like after you've figured that out. So going back to your question, we see companies that have a robot prototype that's sort of working in the lab. And they're like, well, we need some software to manage that robot, even if it's, you know, a single prototype. What we've done is we have a free edition of our software. It's not a trick. It's free forever and for unlimited robots. It does have more limited functionality, but it's the functionality that most companies need when they're just getting started. Our goal there is to save people a lot of time. And, you know, at the end of the day, we want to see more robots in the field at scale. Of course, once they start to scale, they move beyond the lab and beyond pilots. We'll try to convince them to buy our paid edition, but it's still going to be up to them if they want to do that or not. They can, of course, build their own. Our platform has API, so you can build on top of our platform if you wish to. So for those very early stage customers, I would say it's a lot about not wasting time and being able to focus as much as they can on the robot itself. I think once you're a little bit farther along, or if you're a bigger company and you also want to think about what you can be great at. And I'll use one example that you're going to be very familiar with and a lot of your audience will be, which is, I'll use the American pronunciation, car share. How do you pronounce it?
We say car sharing. We say Kesha.
Yeah. So we started working with them early on in their development cycle. The product hadn't launched. It was still what I call in the lab, right, in development. There's a case study that we published together that's on the inorbit.ai website that goes into this. But I think part of the realization was, A, they probably have the best engineers for the cleaning part of the robot, right? Because a cleaning robot has to be able to clean really well, right? Not just navigate. So they had that strong advantage from, you know, 80 years of precision engineering. They had a great team working on the autonomy stack. But then when you go out into the messy real world, there's always going to be circumstances where the autonomy is not going to be sufficient, right? No matter how good your autonomy stack is, there's always situations where you're going to need to know what happened. You're going to need to intervene. You need to measure the performance of the robot over time. You need to get data back to the development team so they can continuously improve the operation of the software. And if you ship a robot and never hear from it again, there's no way for you to learn from the data in the field. So we worked with them on really early on, before production deployment. They're now in the hundreds. So throughout that process, their needs also evolved. And I think that's been great to be part of their journey as a robot developer.
It's fascinating, right? Like how, I mean, like we worked also with a lot of cleaning companies. So it like, it's like, so hard to get both right, like the the robotic part, so to say, because that in itself is already so tough. And then you want to develop a nice, you know, like very well cleaning machine on top. It's like two separate challenges that are so hard. And if you want to solve both at the same time, for sure will kill you, like almost certainly. Or you know, like it will take very long time. Yeah.
And if you think about the needs for, let's say, even navigation for a cleaning robot are very different from a material handling robot. So, for example, with cleaning, you want to get really close to the edge, to the walls, so you don't leave a big path of dirty floor next to the wall. But navigating really close to a wall is really challenging. And if you're trying to move pallets, you're going to want to leave a pretty good buffer zone from the edge. So
actually, you have to oftentimes, right?
Yes. So you can't have a generic solution. You need to really work the problem and get it right. If you're also trying to do, you know, operations at scale in the cloud, it's really hard to get, you know, five things right. It's really hard to get one thing right in robotics, but five things is almost impossible.
Florian, one last thing before we close. I mean, like you have seen different industries and really gathered your experience. And I would be really curious, you know, like to get your 5 cents about what you expect for the next 3 years in the mobile robotic community.
Let me maybe take your question and take it a little bit further. Instead of saying the next 3 years, think about a longer time horizon. And what I'm about to say is maybe going to sound a lot very Silicon Valley-esque, but hey, that's where most of my career has been. I can totally see a billion robots out there that are, you know, positively impacting the lives of, you know, 10 billion people. The world is at 8 billion right now, but the expectation is over the next few decades, we're going to get to 10 billion. And I think we're all well aware of the challenges that we have with climate change, with geopolitical strife and all of that. So we need more efficiency to keep, you know, 10 billion people happy. I think robots are going to play a key role in that, whether it's, as we talked during the podcast, you know, keeping spaces clean or growing our food or, you know, more efficiently delivering the products that we need, even entertaining us. So I think we're going to see more and more of these applications. It's getting easier, relatively speaking, to create a new robot and launch it. But to get to that level of scale, I think it's going to take the whole industry, the whole ecosystem working together. And one of the things I'm very proud of that of what we've built at Inorbit, besides our platform, is this, you know, growing ecosystem. And now, you know, Vacu Care becomes part of our ecosystem as well. And I think we all benefit and we're advancing things for all of humanity.
Yeah. So nice words, and I you know, like I couldn't agree more. Maybe one last thought, because you're just mentioning it, right? Where you say, hey, you know, like we need to get to this 1 billion robots, right? And I'm totally with you. You know, like it's I mean, like it sounds very visionary, but it's absolutely what we need, right? There will be no way around it. And at the same time, you know, like we have learned and mastered how to build a robot, you know, like on a very basic level. But the next challenge will be that we need to master how to scale them from a few hundred to really many thousands or millions, right? Because like we are not, you know, like not even close to that. Because like if you look at many basic robots, they are like, I don't know, like 40, 50,000 euro. For a robot, you know, like that is very basic. And if you see, you know, like what you can achieve when building for mass market, like with cars, automobiles, right? Then, I mean, like for 50,000 euro, you get a really nice car, but you get a really basic robot. So, I mean, like that's something where obviously we're going to see huge changes.
As you said, we're at an inflection point, and I draw a parallel with what we saw in with computers, for example, right? We went from very few, very expensive computers, the mainframes, that initially only very few companies could afford, to, you know, what we have right now with, you know, smartphones and smartwatches that have incredible compute power. And there's literally billions of smartphones out there. So I think we're seeing a similar transition with robotics. And I think that's how we get to a billion robots.
Awesome. And it's so nice to build this ecosystem, Florian, right? To be together on this journey, you know, like helping to kick this off and get the billion robots out there together.
Fantastic. And thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to your podcast. It's been an awesome conversation.
Florian, one last thing. How can people reach you and find out more about robot operations and InOrbit?
Yeah, so start at inorbit.ai or visit us at the robot space in Silicon Valley. You can find details on our website. And we're also at various trade shows throughout the year. I think with this podcast coming soon, we'll have Automate around the corner. And that's the biggest robotics and automation trade show in North America.
Sounds great. Yeah, go and check InOrbit. It's a great company. Florian, it's great to join forces and looking forward to a bright future. Thanks so much, Florian. See you next time.
Thank you, Victor.
Das war Roboter in der Logistik mit Victor Splittgerber von Vaku Robotics. Die Expertinnen und Experten für mobile Roboter in der Logistik und Produktion. Weitere Infos erhältst du auf vaku-robotics.com.